You can afford a Spider-Man kilt. You should be able to afford 10 quid to buy yourself a decent headset, for Christ's sake. There we go. Anyway, I think we're live. We are live. A little bit ahead of time, actually. Usually we start dead on 1 o'clock, but because we mess up so badly on this show, and I'm now multi-streaming on like zillions of different places, I just got to shoot it live now. Anyway, welcome everybody to Brain Food Live on Air, episode 51, bringing it to you every Friday as we always do, COVID crisis or not. Anyway, very pleased to be with you. Just a quick shout out to everyone who is tuning in. One of the big reasons why we wanted to maintain this schedule is because obviously times are really strange for everyone right now. And I realized just a little bit of stability and normalcy might be the best thing that I can do for the community. So these things are going to keep going. And the reason why Adam Gordon is there, because he's redundant capacity. So if I go down, he's going to take over. So basically Brain Food Live is going to continue. Okay. So before we kick off, everyone on LinkedIn, am I there? I mean, please just say, yes, Hung, I can hear you. Just comment on the LinkedIn Live there. Make sure that I can see that. Everyone on Facebook, you should be able to see that now. Facebook group on Brain Food. Just quickly comment to say, yes, Hung, I can hear you. And of course, people in Crowdcast, hello, everyone. Can you hear me? Everything okay? Just comment quickly on the chat stream. Let me know that I've got you and you've got me. Okay, fantastic. Good stuff. Okay, so we're going to kick off this show. It's going to be amazing. Chris Ray from Sainsbury's is going to come on and join us for this. He's one of the people I really want to speak to, a shooting star in the recruiting firmament. So really excited for that. And he's going to be talking about employer branding, especially for a brand that has need to differentiate from a big consumer brand. So super exciting. But before we continue, we need to give a quick shout out to our sponsors. Sponsor for episode 51 is our buddies, Video My Job. Video My Job are an amazing product. We're talking about video actually in branding. Video My Job are one of the few tools, I think, that I've actually understood the friction points behind producing video, and they've just dropped all those friction points away. Very easy for anybody to use the mobile phone, create a branded video using their app. It's a fantastic product. Lots of companies in the UK and elsewhere using it. I thoroughly recommend you check it out. In fact, I think Sainsbury's use it as well, to be honest with you. I'm not sure. I'll have to ask Chris that when he's there. I'm going to just share the link to everyone there. Please check out Video My Job if you care about employer branding, which you should. Anyway, on to the show. Adam Gordon is in the house. Adam, how are you, sir? How's life?
Yeah, very good, thanks. I just wanted to clarify something with you, which was you said, if you go down, then I'm here to take over. Yep. I want to know, do you mean like if your technology goes down or you go down with coronavirus?
Both. I mean, there's been a scenario where the technology has gone down, you have taken over and you didn't make a hash of it. So, you know, it kind of underlies your suitability for that. But secondly, I mean, coronavirus is something everyone is going to get at some point. And if it does last for, 2, 3, 4 weeks, it seems, touch wood, it's a very mild case for most people. But if that is the case, maybe I can't step in. In which case, let's keep rolling. Katrina Hutchison O'Neill, our good friend, who was on last week, I believe she's gone down with it. I think she's coming out of this illness, having just been chatting for every day. But it's something that's going to hit everyone. So we just got to make sure we don't all go down together. Because that obviously knocks out Brain Food Live, but more importantly, it then stresses the public healthcare system, and that's when it gets critical, because the fatality rate ticks up, basically, if you don't get the chance to use a ventilator, essentially.
Yeah, so just on that, in terms of Brain Food Live going down, I've noticed a few trends happening in the last couple of weeks, and the first is that people who have been putting off having conversations with me have been coming back to me and going, see, when you reached out to me a couple of months ago and I said I didn't have time, I've got time now. So that's really interesting. I'm also noticing that we get like quite a large number of people watching Brain Food Live, a larger number who watch it like not live, they watch it like later, but there are more people here than normal. And that's possibly because Chris is joining us. It's possibly because it's getting more and more popular all the time. But I suspect there's quite a lot of people here who otherwise would be in meetings in their office just enjoying the session.
I personally claim credit for my amazing marketing for getting these people to register, to be fair. But you're right. I think it kind of confused me a little bit to say, are people going to watch it more as a result of everyone working from home? I think one argument is yes, because obviously watching from the office is tough. The other argument is we're competing against YouTube and Netflix here. We better have a good show. Otherwise, they're going to flick onto something else. So I think really tough. But the registration rate on Crowdcast has been 100 plus every week this year. Yeah. On LinkedIn, I'm getting 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 sometimes watching it there. Facebook group, 300, 400. I'm actually now doing this on Periscope as well. So if anybody's on Twitter or what have you, take a look. Am I actually live there? Let me know. But basically, that means quite a large audience for everyone who watches this, maybe 4,000 or 5,000, which is fantastic for a recruiting webinar, I think. Anyway, moving on, Adam. In terms of Recruiting Brain Food last week, did you get a chance to read the COVID-19 special, mate?
Yeah, I did. And I hoped we could do something slightly different to normal in terms of reviewing the brain food, because there was a lot of articles around remote working and, you know, sort of macro trends and things like that. I thought that rather than reviewing three or four of the different individual items, I would select three or four topics which came through all of them and just have a bit of a conversation about those specific topics.
Okay, we've got to be quick on them though, because we don't want to bleed into the main show. Nope. So can we do a minute per topic that you want to choose?
Absolutely. The first one is around remote working generally. And what do we think what difference does it make for organizations? So the first thing is, of course, there's some organizations or some jobs where remote working, you can't do it. You can't build a building from your house.
Yep.
You can't serve cups of coffee from your house. So there are certain industries where it's pretty much the industry has got like complete awful problems.
It's in-person working, and there's actually a big class as a divide, and there can a socioeconomic divide there, and that's become apparent. Because if you're an in-person worker, which, you know, I didn't even think of that term before, but anybody who can work from home effectively is a digital worker. And that is the person, you know, theoretically, you know, we're future-proofed automation-wise and all this type of stuff, which I don't also believe. But at the same time, we're probably at a socioeconomic level, at a higher level than the people that do need to be in person. And that's a big trend. That's a big realization for a lot of people. Number one. A second thing I would also like to add is that we're beginning to realize what the really important jobs are. Management consulting, bond trader, whatever, lawyer. No.
Pipeline automation.
Yeah, no, not at all, mate.
Emergency service, is it not?
That's probably as low down as it's probably just above recruiter, I would say. No, but recruiter is actually a critically important job. But you look at the people that have to go in, healthcare workers, garbage disposal, grocery clerk, you know, put people stacking shelves for food. This is super important work, and was finally starting to realize that it took an absolutely critical event for us to do that. But I hope we get hope there's a rebalancing after all of this, and we can start recognizing who are actually performing the important jobs in society.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that kind of leads me on to the next thing, which is around, you know, who's hiring and who isn't as a result. This is really fascinating, because you look at industries like, of course, leisure, hospitality, transportation. There's not a lot of hiring going on there for obvious reasons. However, in certain aspects of retail, including supermarkets, I'm really interested to find out Chris's perspective on this. But there appears to be a lot of hiring. And Amazon announced, 100,000 jobs they announced a few days ago?
Yeah. So supply chain, warehousing, we talk about food retail, all of the stuff that basically keeps society moving, they need people. There's a post coming out in Brain Food next this Sunday, actually, which also tracks who are the workers that are most exposed to coronavirus risk. And they map exactly onto the people that we need most now. And that's that really puts it into context where we're at. These grocery clerks, these people stacking the shelves and serving, keeping the shops open, do they have protective equipment? Are they gloved up? They aren't. And it's like, wow, these people, probably not very highly paid, putting them in the front line, it's really, morally incorrect. So
we need to
sort all of this out, ideally sooner rather than later, but certainly we'll sort this out when it's all said and done. Oh, on that final note, by the way, the salaries for healthcare workers have gone through the roof. Nursing, direct care support, all of these, which we under Boris Johnson's new immigration laws, these would be low-skilled workers, right? These would be under the 27K kind of level. They're now shooting up. Eva Zills just shared something on NurseFly, which is a healthcare job board in the US. $3,000 per month, I think, is the average job for a nurse over there. And in the Netherlands, and I'll be promoting this in a newsletter, they're doing something called Recruiters for Good, which is a great initiative by smart recruiters. I totally want to back this and get involved. But essentially, it's a way for people to help organizations rapidly hire these emergency care workers. Dutch government's going 4K euros per month for emergency workers. So straight away, they're stepping into it and saying, you know what? We have to just up these salaries. Like, for some reason, we all recognize that these salaries have been ridiculously under what they should be, letting the market determine it rather than what the value is. And, you know, we're starting to see a big rebalancing there, which is great.
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing I wanted to mention was there's a couple of other sectors which are seriously, needing more people. I had a great meeting with a computer games company yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, the demand for more online games, of course, is high. The demand for Zoom is high. The demand for Netflix is high. For Domino's is high. So, there's like people are just they need more entertainment at home. They need food sent to them from their, they can't go out for a meal. They're still getting Domino's sent in. So that's really interesting as well. And then biotech, pharma, life sciences, medical devices, they're all either business as usual or going up.
Going upwards. I mean, there's going to be a massive phase shift in terms of what are the companies that are going to do well out of this and which are the companies that aren't. And it's fascinating as recruiters to look at this and then think, okay, where do we need to position for it? Because I think there will be a rebound. Probably there'll be a lot of the overall job volume will go down because we're going to automate a hell of a lot more. There is a lot of stuff that you need to do in person, which is labor intensive. Like, for instance, the Amazon stacking up 100,000 people. That's fantastic. But that's job displacement also. You know, that's from the retail. That's from the high street. So they're taking and not their fault, but obviously everyone is not going and getting stuff on the high street. And it's just a migration of jobs rather than the creation of new jobs, so to speak. So the overall volume of work probably goes down, but there's certain sectors are certainly going to be in high demand for a little while. Okay, what else, man?
Moving on to one other related topic, which is around tools.
Yep.
So in my business, there's 15 of us in the business. And to be honest, anybody can work from home anytime they like. So we were already tooled up. We already use Zoom to meet each other. We already use Slack to collaborate. And so I'm quite interested in the real variance in the way that some industries and some companies in particular have just gone, no problem. We can do everything from where we are. I'm talking about digital workers, though. I'm not talking about in-person workers, as you described it as. It has really exposed to me how badly prepared most staffing companies have been for this.
Do you think? I think that staffing generally is quite modular, though, in the sense that Your agent is your desk, right? I mean, you run your own desk. You're fairly independent from everyone else. So I think
any of them use laptops.
Is that right? They must have their own laptops. I'll tell you what it is. They probably don't have corporate sort of VPN set up so they can access databases and stuff like that. Because one of the problems with agencies is that they're so tight. Very, very defensive and putting walls in place and all the rest of it. So it could be that they have laptops, they just can't access email from another device, maybe. I don't know, it could be stuff like that.
Yeah. I think this is going to create permanent widespread changes to the way we work. So those companies that are going through the pain of enabling their entire workforce to work from home right now, they're not going to go back to a position where everybody needs to be in the office every day. They're not going to go back to a position where we're doing conference calls. They're going to be using video communications like this much, much more so than they are, you know, more analog ways of doing things. So
no, there's no doubt about that. In fact, I think bending it back to employer branding, imagine the employer who is old school wants to return back to, you know, rewind the clock to 2019 and say, hey, everyone, we're back in the office. We're doing this, that, and the other, and being inflexible about the possibility of work from home, remote working, and so on. That's bad employer branding. There's going to be a lot of people that have just discovered that actually you can do your job without needing to be physically in the office. So, big phase shift. This is global as well. It's not just us. It's like everyone on the planet has just experienced this. Ridiculous.
It really is. And I'm absolutely convinced that companies are going to be right now. In fact, I know they are. I know more companies are evaluating better ways of doing things in terms of processes, better ways of doing things in terms of technologies, and automation and things like that. And I think we're going to see the emergence of more companies like, I'm not sure if you're familiar with 5CA in the Netherlands. It is a contact center business with a couple of thousand people.
All distributed, right? Yeah.
Across the world, they all work from home.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a call center business. They all work from home. So if they can do it, we should all be able to do it. And it's going to just accelerate the way the world was going anyway. We've talked about remote working, distributed workforces, a lot on Brain Food Live. And it's going to accelerate that, which is that is one small aspect of good news about this.
You know what? It's always surprised me why call centers ever needed to be in the same place, because it's so noisy as an environment. Surely this is the worst place to ever get, you know, telephone workers shouldn't be clustered together anyway. And that's leaving aside the infection risk. Like, we've seen number of clusters where people have actually been infected because they're working in call centers. You're literally cheek by jowl. So it makes no sense. I think, yeah, absolutely. Big phase shift. A lot of these jobs are going to start to being distributed. That'll have second order effects on things like property prices, economic agglomeration might kind of reverse, you know, the idea that cities get bigger, maybe that doesn't happen anymore. That's a huge difference. I think that there'll be a lot of positive things emerge from this tragic situation. We just got to minimize the tragedy right now, which is actually to stay home. So that in itself will, you build the future as well as minimize the dangers of the present. All right, cool.
One last one. It's inspired by your embarrassing work from home moments post.
I love this.
Live. So we just came off an all hands at our business, and Billy brought up at the end of the call. Billy brought up one of his cats, and everybody whether you're a cat person or not, you see that cat's like face going, what the heck am I doing on this screen?
And tell me it crapped on him. Please tell me something like that happened.
Not on the call, no. But then Karen went to get her dog, and so we just did a couple of minutes of, right, okay, get your pets in.
All right, very nice.
And of course, actually, we didn't get any kids on, but there has my wife took my daughter into her home office yesterday for a couple of hours. And she's 3 years old, wearing a princess dress and a wig. And she's joined several of the calls. So she's got a bit of education around marketing just from joining her mom's calls.
I'm pleased to see that, because I think, because everyone's have to shove it sort of to work from home. We're not set up to do it. Most of us aren't. And we need to kind of be okay because we're at home. We shouldn't have to shut the kids away. You remember that very famous video? Was it 2 years ago where the guy who's an expert Was doing the Sky News or something, and kid one sort of wanders in doing a dance, and then kid two comes in a stroller, and then the wife like leaps in and grabs them, chucks them both out, all on camera. But I think that era hopefully is over. You know, we're going to be cool with kids being in the shot. Why not? You know, life happens. It shouldn't. We shouldn't have to worry too much about it. So yeah, it's fun. Also, I need to also add one more thing on this. Laurie Ruderman tweeted something really interesting the other day about appearance and putting camera on, and I think she was referring specifically to women in this case, actually, because she was mentioning makeup and all this type of stuff, and she's saying, listen, forget about it, no one cares, just default to getting the camera on, and don't feel like you need to be presented in such a way where it takes a lot of work. It's like it should just be a normal day's activity, and I think that's also something we've got to recognize. I mean, I put a shirt on here just because, you know, that's my uniform to do a call, but generally speaking, haven't taken a shower today, should have done, do it later, but you know what I mean, it's like whatever, no one really gives a damn, as long as you have food in your teeth or anything like that, you should be good.
One thing to add to that is, though, if you, and this is a tip, a lot of people don't realize this, if you're kind of new to doing video communications like this, if your bandwidth is going slow, switch your video off. So it goes against what you've just said, but if you can't actually hear the person or it's stuttering or whatever, switch your video off and it's going to be 3 times faster.
Yeah, we got no excuse for bad bandwidth either. So the telecoms companies really, seriously, we really, and I think this is probably a more persistent problem in the US than anywhere else, actually. US, Australia, big countries with, I would say maybe monopolistic or oligarchical type of situation with telecoms providers. But you've got to roll this stuff out. People need to speak on video and not have to worry about this switch on, switch off business, you know? So anyway, okay, listen, we've been raveting on and we've got Chris waiting for us. So I'm quite keen to bring him on. Before I do, let me ask you the question on this concept. So we're talking about differentiated employer branding, meaning the company you're representing already has a prominent brand, like Sainsbury's has, like any B2C company is well known for this, but you need to build an employer brand. And how do you do that? Do you do it alongside with the, do you align with the brand values of the corporate brand, or do you create your own? I mean, how does all this work?
I've got some unpopular views on employer brand as it is, and I just don't really value employer brand anything like as high on the agenda of what recruitment teams need to do as it gets. I think it's absolutely overblown, but I definitely think it needs to align with the corporate brand, and I also think that the connection between how you market or how you brand your organization as an employer with how you educate people both inside your business and outside your business needs to be totally aligned. So I believe that employer brand needs to become almost a learning and development activity as you educate people on how to be better at their careers.
Yep.
And then as they come through the funnel and actually how they might, their career might actually be better inside your organization. So I think there's a whole variety of different aspects to employer branding which have to change, and employer brand is the term that applies to almost every employer brand I see.
And on that note, let's bring Chris in, because I can see him there and he's got better things to do than wait to get on screen. So I'm going to just invite him right now. So Chris, listen, you should have got a notification. If you're watching this, just click on that and we will get you on air. By the way, I would disagree with you, by the way. I'm going to look forward to seeing Chris's view, but I think that it's possible and maybe preferable to build an independent employer brand outside of the corporate thing. There he is, Chris Ray. How are you doing, sir?
I'm good. You?
Well? Very well, thank you. I'm very well. Very well indeed.
And are you well as well?
All good. Very good.
Chris, for the few people that don't know you, I just wonder whether you could just introduce yourself very quickly, who you are and what it is that you do.
So my name is Chris Wright. I head up recruitment strategy for Sainsbury's, so the multi-channel, multi-brands. I look after 5 key work streams from a recruitment point of view. So I look after brand attraction, social media and events, assessment and selection, policy and process, and then also supplier contingent workforce. And then I have project teams as well.
Way too big a job, Chris. Way too big a job. I hope you've got a good squad underneath you to help manage all of that.
Awesome team. But very different at the moment, as we all were talking about, how the world is changing at such pace.
Let's deal with that straight away, Chris, because I actually had a conversation online about this, about how certain companies are really doing their marketing and branding some disservice in times of crisis by continuing with business as usual marketing in this scenario. You know, the auto schedule posts, the kind of programmatic ad buys that they haven't reviewed on what the content is and how inappropriate it might be now. I just wondered what policies, I mean, have you had a review of this in light of COVID-19 and what the corporate comms have been out of Sainsbury's?
So Mike, he's keeping us all up to date, and he's updating us with comms every day. From a recruitment point of view, is we are not posting on LinkedIn and on our social channels. From a recruitment point of view, we're only giving business updates out. And we've come out with a new recruitment campaign. I don't know if you've seen it. It's supporting us in feeding the nation.
Yeah, amazing. I'd love to, if you've got a link for that, Chris, please do share it in the chat stream. I'd love for the audience to take a look at that.
So it's a two-pronged approach. What we really want to do is help supporting feeding the nation. So it's all about become a fixed term colleague in a short period of time, because we understand there's quite a number of people have been made redundant or asked to be paid unpaid over a period of time. And we've also created a redeployment, so we're in contact with a number of businesses. Quite a significant number have reached out to us. So what we've led with is, do you lead or own a business and you can register your interest? And we're now in contact about redeploying individuals across the network and trying to get them into suitable roles. But always our colleagues come first, in keeping them safe and ensuring that their well-being is there as well. But it's a crazy time for us as a business. And as I say, is our colleagues are doing a great job, and we're supporting our colleagues out there in the front line.
Just give us an idea of the numbers that we're talking about here, Chris. So Sainsbury's one of the biggest sort of supermarket chains in the UK and elsewhere. So what are we talking about?
It's going to be released out tomorrow, so I won't take that. I can't do that today because we want to get the number correct. So we will be releasing that tomorrow, the number. Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about, like, just sort of any of the trends? Like, I'm really interested. There will be areas of your kind of, let's call it, you won't call it this, but I'm going to just say it anyway, so everybody knows. I mean, your white collar workforce, I'm guessing there's areas where you're going to have more people in the business than you have had. And I guess in stores, I wonder what, and distribution, I wonder, has there been a surge in requirements in those areas as well?
I think it's more about taking the pressure off the stores and ensuring that our colleagues feel supported. And because as we all know, it's such an unprecedented time for anyone across the globe. And that's what we're making sure, is that our colleagues have enough support in there and getting things onto the shelves to feed individuals. Because we all know people are stockpiling, and we've come out and we've said in the presses we've restricted on certain items, which I think is a great thing that Mike's been doing. So Mike and the team are doing an absolute fabulous job, and I'm proud. I'm actually not just saying this, and it comes across quite cheesy, is I couldn't be more prouder to work for an organisation that really is putting the local community at the front of everything and really are thinking about people's well-being. And that's one thing you can hear resonating across the whole of our 186,000 employees that we've got.
This is actually quite a fascinating segue, which I'd like to explore just a little bit more, Chris, because you're talking about lots of people have been let go. We have already seen mass redundancies. We've already seen people have had to take unpaid leave, which I would say is more or less in effect the redundancy. We've got rent to pay and so on. And the idea for companies like Sainsbury's, because you've got a spike in demand, is to try and connect these folks to the jobs in the locations that you have those jobs in. Is that more or less what you're trying to do with this campaign?
Yeah, so it's two-pronged. It's people who, A, the ones, twos, may not be a part of a big organisation that can walk in store and ask for opportunities, or the other avenue that we're hearing across, and I won't mention any companies, that 10, 20, 30,000 people are currently being made redundant. So how can we put a mechanism in place? And we have a stage two of our redeployment. We will be talking about that Monday out, and we're just currently designing. So me and my team and a number of other colleagues are all working through the weekend, and we don't mind. The main thing is to get this up and running to really support individuals in getting the job if we can.
Let's bend this back to employer branding, Chris. What kind of angle, I mean, do you do employer branding in the sort of situations of crisis here? Was it required to think about that? Or what was the internal conversations going when this campaign was starting to be developed?
So it's actually, we learned on our comms. I'm all about relationships in the business, and we very much work with comms. And we always decide, is this a joint approach? Is this just a recruitment message? So very much is they'd used that with a number of all of our other competitors about working to feed the nation. So we just thought it complemented very much of, actually, let's use this tagline as well going out. And we used the exact same collateral as we've used. If you go onto the website, we've used the same imagery we've used on the website. Our main focus was getting it up in pace and really getting it out there for people, to give them information, to give them clear direction and where to go to.
And the website's just sainsbury's.com, right? Is that right?
I've shared it in the chat.
Okay, so cool. Yeah, I can see it. Fantastic. So yeah, I would recommend everyone take a look at that. That's a really interesting project, very topical, of course, as well. And very, very critically important. There was a state in the US, I think Minnesota, has reclassified the grocery clerk as an emergency worker, because that is the situation. We've got probably a 5 to 10-fold spike in demand on food produce, I would say. Chris, I'll wait for the real data tomorrow when you're able to release it. But certainly, people are buying more than they normally would, and that has a huge demand for the people that come in and restock, as well as different types of items. Right? Suddenly, we're buying hell of a lot more rice, I would guess. Hell of a lot more, pasta than we ever did. So, super interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Main topic of the day, though, and also kind of related, but this idea of employer branding when you already have a big consumer brand. Now, what are your general thoughts on this, Chris? Is there a difference to do employer branding for a company that's already well known?
So it's pros and cons. So we're well known in the retail grocery. Everyone knows this. We're a household name. But we've created a new digital tech and data brand. And we looked at it as we're not knowing in that particular area. So we have to differentiate ourselves, but not take away our history, our heritage, and not forget who we are. So it's always making sure that they complement each other and you can show the difference between them.
That's probably the number one problem, isn't it? Number one challenge. If you're well known for one thing, that's what people think about. But they don't. That is an impediment, therefore, if you're hiring for other types of people. Like, for instance, a software engineer might look at Sainsbury's and it's basically a grocer. What's interesting about that? Whereas, in fact, obviously, when you think about the supply chain, logistics, and all that type of stuff in the back, it's super interesting. Okay.
Even more so. Two years ago, worked on a really, really big exercise with Lloyds Banking Group in the digital area. Like, they hire, it's one of the biggest digital employers in London, but most people wouldn't think about that. And it was all about changing the perception. And these digital and tech people were going, wow, I had no idea that you had budgets to do these really cool things that you're doing right now to change the way that people live. So
on that note, guys, how do you go about changing that perception, Chris? Let's focus on these tech folks to begin with. What's the strategy and what are the steps?
So it's interesting. I'll actually give you a bit of background. I was given 50 days to create a new brand for our digital tech and data. And we follow the exact same scientific that how we approach any EVP, discover, develop, implement. I call that the easy bit. It's activation is the hardest part in any EVP. So it's getting it into the market and keeping it going and getting the key messages out into the arena. And I see a lot of businesses, and I won't name any, is they do all this work and then it just sits on a career site and they think everyone's just going to turn up and look at a career site. Well, actually, no, that's not going to happen. So really, it was the best thing ever. And Adam, you've said it very well, is the one thing that people don't realize about us and a couple of main trends that come out of our MVP, which I can share with you, is people just thought we're all about the shop floor. They thought we were environmentally unfriendly and they'd lack an understanding of tech talent. So when we went out and did our research as part of our EVP sprint, we researched a number of our competitors and we researched a number of colleagues that worked at our competitors. And we really wanted to understand what did the industry think of us, what did our competitors think of us, but what did internally think of us? And then we mapped that across to our corporate values, etc.
Right. So let me just stop you there, Chris. This is a massive survey campaign, isn't it? Is that how you do the discovery piece?
Correct. And so we will come at it from different approaches. So we'll go at it from internal. So we will go from one-to-one interviews with board straight down to entry-level roles. We'll do group assessments and we'll start to really understand the key trends. So what we're not so good at, what we are great at, and we'll start to distill the information. Then we'll go back out and we'll understand what's going out in the external markets. And we'll pick people at random, impartial, and start to understand what people think of Sainsbury's. What do people think of the other brands as well? Mm-hmm. Can't put two and two together. They couldn't. And we know that it's in the market. And then also we went out to the industry. So what did the industry think of us as well? So then that really helped with us how we started to develop what we needed to do to really change our approach.
Right. So that was the, obviously a lot more to it, but let's say that was the discover phase.
Yeah.
What did you do with the discoveries after that? What was the second phase after discovery?
So it's all about how do we create the creative process. So it's interesting is what we do, organizing idea, visual approach. Like that's what we started to have to build and really understand that from that point of view and what would be the creative deliverable out and how would we show up to the market. And what would we stand for as well? So I don't know if any of these have been on Sainsbury's DTD, which is digital tech and data. It's our acronym. It's really interesting is we've completely moved away. People did not want to see the same. What is one of our most powerful things in the market, Sainsbury's, Argos, Habitat, the retail and certain other roles. They didn't want to see that. So what we've done is we built characters. And the characters represent things within the digital tech and data domains. And they're always showed together as one, showing us as a multi-brand, multi-channel. So it's a bit subliminal, but also it's got our brand Pantones in the colors as well. So it's
got it, yeah.
With it as well.
Yeah.
We pretty much just wanted to change our identity and how we looked and felt, but we didn't want to be ashamed of our name, because we even talked about throughout the process is should we come up with a new funky name like Sainsbury's Labs or something. We were like, actually no, let's actually just, we're Sainsbury's at the end of the day, that's who we are, let's not try and paper over it, let's remain it in our identity, but let's actually turn up to the market in a very different way.
Yeah So it's basically keeping a sort of thematic bridge, if you like, from the branding at the corporate, as you say, the Pantones are there, but you create a different digital space, a different space away from the corporate brand, to be able to really develop this concept as to, you know, what is going on at a high tech level within the business.
And the one thing I would say is I'm a big fan of feedback. Or constructive feedback. Get the emotions away and let's look at constructive feedback and what actually writes it. Like the first visual content we've done, I got told it looked like CBeebies. It did from my reflect on it. It did. I used to be a smoker myself. Someone said it looks like a cigarette packet. Great, because we looked at the Gen Zers. Taking that constructive feedback is huge. And that's what I would say in any EVP pieces. Listen to the external market, listen to your candidates. Sometimes candidates should win over your internal structure. And that's sometimes the hardest piece is the market telling you one thing, but your passion of your colleagues is telling you another. And you have to bring that up sometimes.
So how do you get that to happen though? Did you do a soft release of the brand and then kind of iterate on it? Like how do you get candidates to feedback to you?
It's constant iteration. You have to shred your skin. and you have mm-hmm. to constantly develop. So it's interesting, is like we did this video of launch, which is a bit of, should I say, glitch effect. And it's interesting. So our tech colleagues love it because they're all about fixing. But some of the digital colleagues go, well, digital's not a meant to glitch because then that means it's broken. And I was like, I never actually realized that. That's amazing. So now when we're out to market and we're talking digital, we don't have the glitch. It comes in a different way. But when we're out talking for engineering, we have the glitch because that actually resonates with individuals as well.
Super interesting. Okay, so the creative piece, we've done the discovery, we've done a bit of the development. What do we do after that? What was the stages again, Chris?
So it goes from discovery, develop, implement, and activate.
So implement, this is launch, right? How do we get it out there? Was that a big deal, or did you just press a button and it happens?
So that's my big, that's another big thing I say. Don't do big bang. It annoys me again, okay? Don't be a one-hit wonder. There's nothing worse. It's all about getting it out to the market slowly. Start to penetrate the market, start to learn from it, start to listen to feedback, start to run different ad sets, and start to build on your follower base, start to build on your engagement, and then slowly go out with your different campaigns. So we launched in September, and we only officially started our campaign, big campaign for the Art of Beautiful Code in February.
Right.
So we really wanted to test and learn from the market and what's going on and how they're accepting the brand. And what do we need to, A, understand the different Gen Zs, understand who wants to see what, understand how many likes we're getting on posts, et cetera.
So I'm trying to visualize this. I'm assuming September was the launch of the new website, let's say. That's the artifact we're talking about. But what didn't happen was any big song and dance from comms in Sainsbury's. You want to just push it out and see what people thought. And how were you capturing that information? Was it all just through tracking how they behaved on the website, or did you again collect information from people as they moved through the site?
So we tag everything using GTM coding, and Adam will know this better than us all. So we've got all of our Google Analytics pulling through from various boards and cross platforms that we use to understand the audience behavior, whether that's going in via Sainsbury's.jobs or coming in via LinkedIn and other the other boards that we use as well. And one thing that we've really learned for it is we've implemented a video first strategy.
Right, okay.
It's been such a great learning for me and the business is, and VMJ, as I call it, it's a video of my job.
You do use them, yep.
So I love them. I think they're great. Everything is video first. Anything we do, and that's been such a learn for the business. And the one piece of advice we'd say is have your external comms and internal comms on board, because at the end of the day, that's their job. They will help you and they will keep you out of trouble as well, especially working from. And anything we do now, we think video. So our leaders within digital tech and data use it. They send messages both internally and externally. And that's the one thing that we've seen is working hugely in the industry, authentic content. So give you an example. We have one of our CTOs go to India. Our offshore there. My job, and he literally videoed his 4 days there. It had the highest engagement rate.
Was he just doing it all through Video My Job?
All through Video My Job.
Amazing.
We give him a tripod and the lights as well. Of course, but the power of video, and I think this is one thing we have not realized in the recruitment industry, the amount of engagement we get through video is huge.
Yeah.
And I think this piece of us all now going on camera and all talking now more and more and more, I think people will get more and more comfortable across it. Right. I really do think that we're missing the trick within the industry of the lack of content. And I was reading Gartner, and they're saying by 2022, 80% of the internet will be video.
Right.
So if you're not having a video strategy, I really think you will lose out. You have to be thinking, I know what I'm like. I'd rather watch a video than read a load of content.
Yep.
That's just me personally.
And you're quite a young dude, aren't you, Chris? So let's say, you know, the growing market is going to be people who, you know, the new people coming into the market, the Gen Zers and all the rest of it. If they're a recruitment target for you, then really you need to understand how they're producing and consuming media these days. And it isn't with text. You know, it's not typing into keyboards. It's producing these videos. So tell me a little bit about the video first strategy, Chris. What does that mean? So when you have a campaign straight away, you default, the default template in your mind is say, what are we going to do with the video on this rather than, I don't know, what might previously have been an infographic, let's say, or might previously have been a written blog post.
It's not just campaign. It's what should, so take it back a bit and go is, okay, what's my social strategy? What am I going to do here? How am I going to get to the market? How many times am I posting a week? Why? Because there's a fine line being, oh my God, this company posts all the time. Do they do anything to, actually, they've posted once this month. Clearly, it's not exciting. So let's get that right. And then also understand your pillars. It should always link back to your EVP. So is it thought leadership? Is it colleague success stories? What is that content? And we've got a rule is, which I'm saying is, we should be, the minimum we should ever be is lacking 1 month of content. You should need to be a month ahead. I'm targeting my team to 3 months ahead of content. And it's a 70-30 rule. 70% is locked on, it never moves. 30% moves because the world changes at pace.
Yep. So very quickly on this before I let Adam jump in, because I've been dominating the chat here, but the back of the envelope, like what is the posting frequency that you would recommend for a new brand trying to push the new brand like you guys have been doing? I mean, or does it ramp up or down? I mean, depending on, you know, how embedded the brand now is, I guess.
Three times a week.
Three times a week. Yep.
Three times a week. And play with it. When I say play with it, I mean, start to understand, is it 7:30 in the morning, which we know on LinkedIn, one of the most popular times, and getting people in the morning, is start to understand when you get new great organic. Mm-hmm. Once you get your organic sorted, start to play with PPC, start to pay with pay-per-click, then start to, that will start to acknowledge. So then when you build a campaign, you're able to bring great data to any supplier that you're going to use, whether that's Indeed, LinkedIn, or Facebook, Google, you name it. You're able to have good, positive conversations and drive that conversation in the correct way.
Mm-hmm.
Maximize your return. And that's the big thing is, let the data maximize your return of investment.
Yeah, excellent.
In terms of video, I'm going to link it to another subject that I know that you're really enthusiastic about, but it's, you know, what do we think the impact of a video-first strategy is on diversity?
Interesting. We're looking at some of the stats, and I'm not allowed to share them, which is killing me. But it's sharing your colleagues. And this is the authentic piece, right? And I see this all the time. Don't put me up because I'm gay, right? Gay, don't put me up gay. Don't put me up because I've got neurodiversity. Showcase your colleagues. Showcase what you're trying to achieve, and be honest if you're trying to A, increase BM, increase gender, talk about it in your content strategy. So to me is, what the worst thing to ever do is, oh, I'm just going to put Chris up because he's a gay man. Actually, I'm just going to put me up for having loads of neurodiversity because I'm the only one in the business. That's not true, by the way. But it's just making sure that you keep that in the back of your mind. Why are you doing it and what are you trying to achieve by that post? And I think that's where the strategy comes in, about planning your posts.
Go ahead, Adam.
Hung talked about, you know, if you're trying to talk to, say, Gen Z, you communicate with them in the way that's familiar to them. But what if you're trying to talk to boomers at the same time?
And so I like to say paving the way for the Gen Zers these days. So that's what we should be doing. And this annoys me because my nan's 80 and she's got Twitter and I don't have it, okay? They still have technology. They may be a bit slower on the technology, but we need to stop ruling people out and thinking they don't use technology. They do. My mom sends me videos more than I send her videos of memes, etc. So I don't think it's a generation thing. Personally, that's just me.
You might be right, but my instinct is you're absolutely wrong, because I don't think people in their 60s are sending memes and doing video. Your mom might, but I don't think most of her compared to like 20-year-old.
I think, you know, but you know what, this might actually be determined a little bit about your relationships you have personally, right? So if you have like a conversation with your parents and you do send videos with them, they might respond in kind. But if you're in a, because you might drag them, I guess, into the world that you're talking about. That's kind of been my experience using WhatsApp, for instance. My mum had no clue about any of these tools. She doesn't really understand the internet, to be fair, but she understands that, oh, she can send a video on this. And after a few iterations of that, because she's motivated to do it, she wants to speak to her family, they end up grokking it, you know? So anyway, I interrupted you, but you've got to say something.
I think, right, do you know what this talks about earlier is us all working from home now and having to embrace the technology is going to be a game changer. This is my view, is people will use technology if there's a need to use it. And we've seen Facebook portal coming out, we've seen Skype. Yes, they may not send memes, but they'll use it for some other things. And I do think is that they do watch videos at the end of the day. They're just doing it on their, they're just doing it on a device. But coming back to it is, it's about more about the ease of consuming content is why we're doing the video as well, because we feel as people actually engage with content a lot more and understand the content when we do a video first strategy.
Yeah. Chris, I want to bring it back to the final point that you mentioned at the beginning. That was the issue, the big issue was the activation piece. You've identified that as actually one of the critical areas that companies who are launching or building a new employer brand struggle with and make the mistake on. What have you learned in building this digital hub for Sainsbury's on activation?
One thing I would say is always have a baseline. Do you know what I mean by a baseline?
No.
When I say a baseline is measure where you were before you kicked off and really understand is, are you actually making a difference? And it's okay to turn back and it's okay to change things. And that to me is, it comes back to just let the data help you and let the data tell you the story to do it. Because you can keep on hammering away and doing things and thinking it's great, but if you don't have your metrics, you've got no way of knowing if it's working.
So the baseline was the discovery, wasn't it? Collect the information, understand where you stand now, where you've got to be. Yeah. And then there's obviously this step-by-step process to get there. What about the persistent activities to help you get there? Like you, as you mentioned, with your sort of the first archetype of failure, if you like, was a company that would launch something and then that would be it. Like they would leave that and say, right, fair enough, we've done our branding. What would you kind of, what's your view of this and how would you advise that business if you were an external consultant?
That kills me inside. It's like, tell me what consumer brand does that to when they're trying to sell a product. It's like when I go through my Insta and I go through my Facebook, I see ads from consumers trying to sell me shoes because they've been on their website and it shows and they're constantly engaging with me. Why do we think one of the most important things they will ever do in your life is change jobs? It's one of the most stressful things. They are consumers at the end of the day. And unless you keep them front and center in the mind, there's loads of other jobs out there that they'll go click on. And that's, and to me is, and then we're now into the era, as I like to call, swipe, just scrolling up, or in some cases, swipe left, swipe right, etc. But your content needs to be engaging as well. So it's becoming more and more complex on your approach to the market and how you're going to stand out in the market as well.
What about the,
I was going to say, just so they don't go too far down the line, we've got two questions here in the question section. If anybody's got any questions for Chris, can you just post them in the chat, in the main chat thread? Just quickly going back a little bit, I'm guessing, so Tom had a question. I'm guessing this is about the Feeding the Nation site. He said, did you undertake any external user testing after the site went live?
For Feeding the Nation, not DTD? Is that correct?
I'm not sure.
Okay, so for Feeding the Nation, we had to build that in 48 hours. So that's just been up and we're learning from that as well. In regards to DTD, we're constantly out asking. We're constantly out focus groups. We're constantly surveying our candidates. and understanding what's going on as well.
Okay. Zoe's got a question, and I know that you've got a playbook for this, basically. What if you don't have a significant marketing budget for your campaigns? Where should you focus?
So when you don't, so do your organic, like, right. So mobile, and by the way, I've got an iPhone 6, don't mock me for it. I broke my other thing. let's use this, like, get people, educate your colleagues, do a video, make it authentic. This costs nothing. And at the end of the day, if you get people to post onto their own social, we all know is native content gets a wider reach than the corporate content as well.
So can you just explain what that means to someone who's new to branding and marketing, Chris?
Go ahead.
As I understood it, you're basically saying stuff coming from Sainsbury's.com is less engaging than stuff coming from employees at Sainsbury's. Is that right?
Yeah, correct. It, to me, is videos cannot are so authentic. And we've seen that is, and we've even seen that with the data is, when John was out in India, compared to when we post on our site, there was an 8%. So our highest engagement is 10, and his was 18. Literally, the engagement rate that he got through posting from his own channels was a lot higher than we did it in our company page as well.
Yeah.
And it costs nothing. Like, imagine you just engage a leadership team. We want you to start doing content. Let's do it in some pillars, right? You do thought leadership, colleague leadership, let's share success. That is free.
There's a comment there. I think your man, David, great. David, thank you for your point. And you mentioned actually that video-led strategies is expensive, but you're saying no, video-led is expensive. If you've got a big production to do it, get your phone out. It's actually zero.
So I'm going to plug VMJ because actually I love them. But they make life even easier because it's got a teleprompter in it, which some people are not comfortable and they forget what they say. Having the teleprompter, being able to brand it like that. Like, I've been able to give it to individuals in our business who literally set it up, do it, and the brand's in, it's done, and they can post it.
Yeah, and that's the biggest thing with VMJ, in my opinion. It just basically allows you to create branded videos with, like, zero effort, close to zero effort. But you know, you don't have to extract the video, slap it, you know, you don't need a graphics team or whatever. Basically, one person with a phone can do branded videos with VMJ.
From the data that I have, marketing that does not look like marketing performs much better.
It does. I completely agree with that. That's in my opinion. I think is people want to see authentic. Don't polish. And go through my, one thing I would say is, have a nosy on Sainsbury's DTD. And the best video I love is Helen Hunter, our CD, our Chief Data and Analytics Officer. We jumped her. She came off stage at Snowflake. And literally, we jumped on her and said, let's speak to you. And we went live with her. Mm-hmm. And the authenticness from her and the passion that she gave us is the engagement there of people just speaking and going, that's her as a person.
Yep.
I think that's where we go wrong. Sometimes we try and do these old polished big corporate videos, which spend thousands and thousands of pounds. And actually, we just want to hear from the likes of ourselves to understand what am I going to do and what's the company all about.
You know what? I think there's a human need for authenticity because it's something we can trust. And I think we're a little bit tired of the polish and the spin and the stuff that is overly produced. You know, it just doesn't look, it might look amazing, but we know they're trying to pitch something. Whereas if you get it, live stream, even it's part of the reason why Brain Food Live is live, is because, you know, I didn't want a polished experience. So people should just know that this is thrown in together right now. It's like anything can happen. And that's how it should be. We're running short on time, but I just want to deal with Bas's question because he's really brought it back to where we wanted to be. Employer branding is, and just to repeat to the people who can't see it, basically is how people manage your decisions now. Is it make or break for your employer brand given the context of COVID-19?
What's he trying to get? I'm trying to work that out in my head. What's he meaning?
I think he means, like, is it possible to screw it up massively? Like, for instance, I would cite Airbnb as a brand that I kind of made a bad error, but then they recovered it because they weren't giving anybody cancellations for citing COVID-19. They reversed that now and they're putting refunds in. But it's one of those sort of examples where actually, if you persist in doing this, it could really damage you. There's lots in the US, for instance, people like getting laid off with no pay, or people being forced to work against government advice, and turn up, you know, using your contract, that type of activity. Is it make or break for your brand? Would you say?
I think in anything, I don't think it's just this. Is a brand's a brand. It's that you live by your decisions in any walk in life. It's how you treat your employees and respect, and will people show their true colors at the end of the day? But no, I don't think so. I see this working at Sainsbury's. Is we're very passionate about feeding the nation, and that's coming first at the moment. So
yeah, brand consideration number two, right? So forget about that issue.
All going. Mm-hmm. The thing that is, we're not posting on LinkedIn. Like, with all of our content is stopped. It's the only post that's went out is what we're doing, business update, customer updates, and then you'll probably see us post about getting fixed term colleagues into store to help our colleagues. So that's the main focus at the moment. And I didn't want to cancel on you today. I was debating because we've got a lot, but I promised I wouldn't my boss. Yeah.
You had me worried, Chris. I emailed you and you didn't respond. And then I WhatsApped you didn't respond. I thought, oh my God, Adam and I are just going to have to wing this. But no, you here?
I was literally, if you're not most of the night working as well, I literally, 12:45, I ran, jumped in the shower, and literally just jumped in front of the camera.
Amazing. Well, Chris, let me not take any more of your time, because you've been amazing as a guest for us here. I really appreciate you sharing your experience with us, especially in this high stress time. I know we've got a lot of work ahead of us, but it sounds like Sainsbury's are not only doing a great job on the branding side, but also a great job in you know, much more important things, in moving people to places where they need to be. So thank you very much, Chris. Great having you on the show. Okay, that's about it, everyone. We're finishing up right now. We're just on time. So thank you all for watching. It's been an absolute pleasure having you. Thank you, everyone, on LinkedIn. LinkedIn Live's an experiment, but it's going really well. We're getting thousands of people watching it there. Thank you, everyone, on the Facebook group. You're still my original gangsters there. And thank you for the two people on Periscope. Amazing to see you watching it on Periscope. I have no fans there. I have no followers. That's totally fine. Thank you, YouTube stalwarts. Go ahead, Adam.
Just one really, really quick thing. There's a learning that I think everybody can benefit from, amongst all the other things that we've just learned from Chris. But one really big thing, see, in any time, really at any time, but especially in a time with a crisis, what's your number one message? Say it again, 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 again. Feeding the nation, feeding the nation. That's what we're doing. Everything goes into feeding the nation.
Yeah, and as a rule of thumb anyway, you should be able to tell people what you do in that one sentence as a result. So
for me, as any businesses out there that are trying to redeploy, there is a form on the website. Please, we will get in contact. So please fill in the form and feed in the nation. One of the team will be in contact to see if we can support redeployment.
Did you share that link, Chris, into the chat stream? Do it right now so that people can get access to it. And what I'll do is I'll whip it around the other channels as well, so that they can also do that. Super important. And also great to see people do this in every country. You know, we're starting to see this type of community plus private sector plus public sector all rallying around together. So fabulous stuff. I'm going to just sort of finish off with the final point. Embrace video, everyone. This is the new reality. Please do stay home if you can. It's actually very important you maintain quarantine, because a half in, half out method is not going to work to defeat this. Just stay home for 2 weeks. If you can do that, we'll go a hell of a long way. So please, everyone, take care. We will see you next week. We're going to be rolling on with Jonathan Kidder, talking about sourcing hacks, browsers, and extensions. It's going to be a really fun show. Please join us for that. That's already up. I'll email everyone, and you will get the registration link for that. Okay, that's it. See you next week. Dab it, dab it.